You're listening to the Insiders Present AFL, brought to you by Scott Fame and Mark Icon.
Collingwood had a loss again. Port Adelaide won. North Melbourne had a win. I picked Carlton.
Let's back up. There was a controversial issue in the Collingwood game that I like to, you know, talk about. Are you ready?
Go for it.
Two things. Charlie Dixon, the Port Adelaide full forward, who is seemingly incapable of taking a grab, and yet he must have pushed Jordan Ruffin in the back at least three times that everyone's seen, that the replays clearly showed, yet the referees, or the, sorry, what am I talking about, the umpires, were too fucking gutless to actually blow their whistle. He was as guilty as fucking sin. And I look at that, and he kicked three goals with those three kicks, and I think that, you know what? What a load of shit. It should have been a lot closer than what it was, because the umpires were too gutless to blow their fucking whistles. Okay, next.
God almighty. How do they do it?
What you're saying is that the umpires are cheating, and they're not doing their job. That's what you're saying.
I'm saying
you're starting to sound like a rugby league supporter now.
Listen, Mr. Icon, I'm telling you, it's been a big weekend of in the backs that the umpires have been very hesitant by their whistles for. And it's just very annoying because the first game of the week it happened was a Collingwood game and it was there for all to see. And yet, you know, there were some instances in the games today where, again, umpires just swallowed the whistle.
Right. Well, did the Lions win fairly? 121 against the Suns, 71? Fair win?
I happened to turn on that game at halftime. I got home right when it was at halftime, and I thought, oh, look at this. Suns are up. Now, I'd seen none of it, okay? All I'd seen was that the Suns were up. I think it was by 28 points or 20-something at halftime. Have you seen many goals the Suns kicked in the second half?
Oh, I don't know, mate. Tell me.
Have a guess.
Oh, 20.
Try fucking zero.
Yeah.
They lost by 48 points or something. They got absolutely fucking annihilated. It was the most, look, if you're up there watching it, it must have been just devastating to watch because they just did not fire a shot. Brisbane just came out and rolled them like they weren't even there. So a lot of that good work that the Suns have had in the last 3 weeks absolutely went down the S-bend on Saturday. It was fucking terrible.
Are there any crowds going to these games?
Yeah, just not big crowds. There are people going and they're only making them sit in one part of the ground.
Yeah, well, the top of the table clashed Bulldogs against Melbourne. I can't remember who I picked, but did you watch the game?
I watched a bit of it, and it was just one of those games where it was pretty tight. There wasn't any big blowout leads. In the end, the Dogs won by about four goals and won by 20 points. But I just found it incredibly hard to watch at the MCG with no people. The top of the ladder clash with no one there, just very hard to watch.
Well, I'll come back to Hawthorn. They got beat by Adelaide Crows, they got beat by 19 points. The Swannies got up, which is great.
Yeah, they play well. Did you see Lance Franklin? He's into WWE now. Did you happen to see what he did today?
No, I didn't, but I heard that he might be injured. Is that right?
No, he's not injured. He's going to be suspended.
Okay.
Because he's out on the boundary. He's getting tackled. Now, Lance Franklin does not like getting tackled because he's you know, he's a big guy and he doesn't like being held. That's just him. So what he's done, he's actually out near the boundary. He's got his arm, he's got his ball in, his, in the left arm, and this guy's got him from behind. He's then moved the ball to his right arm and cocked this bloke in the back of the head, or in the face with the biggest left elbow you've ever seen. He'll probably get about 2 weeks.
I haven't seen it yet. I'll make sure that I catch up with it on KO. I'll watch it.
I hate to say it, but he's a dickhead. He shouldn't have done it. Because Swans are finals bound. They fucking need him. And if he ever wanted to kick 1,000 goals in this season, well, he's just pissed that down the toilet.
Well, the sub-
because he's going to get suspended.
Well, the Swans are still hovering around that bottom half of the table. They're in sixth spot. Giants got up today, which was great. I had a look at that in the fourth quarter. And they seem to be going okay. And Richmond, again, woes continue. They lose by 38 to the Cats, which didn't surprise me. Didn't surprise anyone, I'm sure. But, yeah, they are in all sorts. So they've dropped to 10th position now. So
Mate, I watched that game today and they just ran out of steam. Give me steam on how you feel to make it real. Real is anything you see. Geelong were clinical, 15-5 they kicked. Richmond were just all over the shop. Their inside 50s were just all over the place. And look, many players have gone out and, you know, they've been out for a long time, but I can't see them making it this year.
Well, Geelong's gone up on that result. They've gone up to second on the ladder, same points, but percentages not much. And Melbourne, I think you predicted this a couple of weeks ago, that somewhere along the line they were going to falter. And they,
yep.
and they look, the last five results is loss, draw, win, loss, win. So it's nothing to hang your hat on. The best out of that lot is Geelong. They've won the last four in a row.
Geelong have, and they haven't been flexing their muscles too hard. They've just been doing enough to win without being, you know, over the top. And that's all you need to do in July, because you don't win a premiership now.
So are we any closer to getting a coach for Collingwood?
No.
All the talk about Ross Lyon early on seems to have dissipated.
They've come out and did say during the week that they are looking to appoint somebody in the middle of September. So obviously right around finals time. Because they're gonna have to have it done by then, because right when their season ends, they will have their exit interviews, like every club does. And lots of people will be told they're not going to be playing anymore. And they're going to be wanting to look at getting people in from other clubs. And people aren't going to come if they don't know where the coach is. It's as simple as that.
Well, I think the market for the coach has reset itself a bit. We've got the Scott brother, who indications are that he might want to coach on now. So that AFL head of football job, you know, from what the press says, it's his if he wants it, but he might want to coach. So who knows? Don Pike seems to get a bit more talk happening. Michael Voss is in the frame, and again, you know, a bloke we haven't spoken too much about because there probably wasn't much chance of him getting the job, but Choco Williams' name seems to be coming up a bit now.
Yeah, I've heard his name mentioned quite a lot too. He's actually an assistant down at Melbourne at the moment, and look, he's always been a great assistant coach, but he's got something all those other coaches don't. He's coached a premiership side.
Yeah.
So he knows what it's about, and he stayed current. He's in the game. So, you know, he was at Richmond for a long time, an assistant, and now he's in Melbourne. So he knows his way around the park. He's okay. And, of course, he's a former Collingwood captain. So hard to say, though. But I think they would be going through all those interviews within the next 3 weeks. I think they'd have a list down all about five or six, or maybe even two or three, that they would be pretty much set on.
I think all these senior assistant coaches fall into the trap of, do I want to coach, first of all, and will I be asked to coach? Now, Michael Voss is, you know, he's probably been the front runner for a lot of jobs, but he's never been over the line. And someone like Choco Williams, and again, Voss falls into this category. I mean, Voss does want to coach. Choco Williams, we don't really know. But when you're a senior assistant coach on X hundred of thousands of dollars a year, with not the amount of pressure that a head coach has, I mean, you can build a career on that.
Pretty much. I think the Brisbane experience spooked Michael Voss. He's been out of it a long time now as a senior coach, but if he wanted to get back in and have a go, well, like you're saying, if he doesn't get the Collingwood job, there's going to be plenty up there for next year if he wants to have a crack. But I must say, though, with Michael Voss, I don't think he's ever actually put his hand up and said, yep, I want to coach again, then I'm going to apply for this job. He always gets mentioned, and then he'll turn around after a 2 weeks or a month and just say, no, I'm not interested. I'm not leaving. He's done that a lot in the last 5 years.
Yeah, well, what makes these senior assistant coaches more valuable now is the soft cap that the AFL is imposing is taking a lot of money out of football clubs. So you're not having these other, you know, positional coaches and all these other coaches. So the senior assistant, a lot more pressure and work falls on them. But at the end of the day, it's a job that they want. It's a job that they love. So, you know, going to a football ground every day for your job, well, why wouldn't you work 10 hours a day? You know, but I hear a lot of these blokes moaning, oh, you know, we're we're overworked, there's too much, we're stretched too thin. For a couple of hundred grand a year for what they do, I reckon put up with the pressure, boys.
Bastards.
Oh, what happened was that last year a lot of the clubs had to let a lot of staff go through COVID. So what's happened is that a lot of the clubs, I'd say probably 90% of them, have been working on a paper-thin staffing.
God almighty. How do they do it?
They've got absolutely bugger-all people. All the fat they once had is gone. That's the moaning you're hearing. It's about that because a lot of teams let assistant coaches go. A lot of clerical people disappeared. It happened in every club. So that's what a lot of them are saying about bigger workloads and things like that, because a lot of the people who were used to be there every day now aren't.
I'd really love to see another series of making their mark this year, which isn't going to happen, but if it did, second year of COVID, understanding of what happened last year and we had a template to work off, I reckon this year would be fascinating following a team around.
Yeah, it would be. And you'd have to wonder if they were going to follow a team, who would it be? Imagine if this year they had to follow Collingwood. Oh, for fuck's sake. It would have won a Logie and a Grammy and every other fucking thing to win. It was such a drama from the start of the season. You know that in the Collingwood game the other night, Scott Pernery got taken from behind. It was a fair enough tackle. He got up, his leg was a bit sore, he's gone off. He's out for the year now. He's got a hairline fracture in the leg.
I think last year...
Can the year get any fucking worse than what it is? I doubt it.
I think last year's show followed four clubs. Richmond was one of them. If I was going to do a making their mark this year, these are the four clubs and why I would want to follow. Firstly, I would go for Melbourne.
Don't laugh, it's not funny, cut.
Because they've had a great start to the year and it was all, you know, happiness.
Peaches and cream.
And we're going to make the finals and first premiership and God knows how long. So that'd be the first team. The second team would be Richmond because of their fall. The third team would be Collingwood for why you said. And the fourth team would be Hawthorn. Now, Hawthorn, which is what I'm coming back to, which I said earlier, all the talk this week has been that there's rumblings in the camp, and I touched on this last week, between Clarkson and Sam Mitchell. Now, earlier on this week, Sam Mitchell went on Jared Waitley's show on SEN, and he said that he wants to work with Clarko, and he's happy to work with Clarko and everything else, and it's all peaches and cream. And then Clarko came out at his press conference during the week, and he gave, it was like a Tonight Show monologue. He just spoke for about 10 minutes.
I've seen it.
Of why he's got the integrity to, you know, to be believed in what he says and why he is a sticker and not a quitter. So I think the line's got to be drawn in the sand. Now, these two blokes have said, yeah, this is what's going to happen. Clarkson's going to be for the year. So anything that someone like Carolyn Wilson says, I've heard this, people at the club are telling me that, we just need to draw a line in the sand and say, yep, these two blokes have said this is the way it is. Let's take them at their word and let's move on.
So Carolyn Wilson was very quiet this week. Didn't hear boo from her. Didn't hear her being quoted. I think she must have just sat there. She would have felt like an absolute fool when that was going on, because whoever her source was has basically just poured the sauce all over her, and she looked like an absolute idiot. And I think there are times, you know, even in life, if you're going to come out with big comments and you're going to do say this and say that, well, then you need to be held a bit accountable yourself. And I'll be hoping, she writes for The Age, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does.
I'll be hoping whoever her boss at The Age is would have just pulled her in for a coffee or a chat during the work and just said, Caroline, for God's sake, how long have you been around for? Who's your source? What's going on? Because that is an embarrassment for her. And it's an embarrassment for the paper that she wrote that bullshit in.
It's actually, mate, I've got a different view to that. It's actually not, because what it does, it focuses attention on the paper. Now, you're going to say, yeah, but it focused negative attention on the paper. No, in a time when newspapers are losing readership and going to the wall, any publicity that a newspaper or a reporter can get is welcomed.
Even if it's absolute rubbish.
Yeah, but again, that's opinion, that it's rubbish. Now, you said Caroline Wilson hasn't been cited this week. Well, you don't watch Footy Classified. And she's on Monday and Wednesday night, and she spoke quite a lot about this subject. So she's not been quiet about it. Yeah, look, mate.
Did she apologise? Because as you know, I don't know shit. Well, you know what? She's full of shit then, isn't she?
No.
She's come out with the biggest comments in history, and then she's proven wrong and couldn't come out and say, oh, geez.
Yeah, but
it's
again,
just weak.
Yeah, but again, it's a point of view, and that's what journalism is. It's a point of view.
Oh, we can agree to massively disagree on that one.
You dickhead. Big dope.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss further episodes. And if you like what you've heard, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating.
Well, I heard that Naomi Osaka was opening the bowling.
Yeah, it's funny about Naomi Osaka, isn't it? How she shuns the publicity, but she'll put herself in front of the world. Let me tell you something about Naomi Osaka, and this can make the podcast.
Okay. Right? She's
from a Japanese mother. She's from a Haitian father. That's why she's a half caste. Right?
Okay.
That'll make it.
Don't fucking laugh. Are you laughing at me?
She was born in Japan. She left Japan to live in the United States when she was 3 years old.
Okay.
How can she be classed as Japanese?
Yeah, fair point.
I rest my case. I've got no other point to make.
Okay. There's actually a guy who's surfing right now in the Olympics.
Is that John Florence?
No, his name's Kanoa Igarashi. Now, almost the same
Aboriginal?
As what you said. Well, he's... Well, no.
Right.
He's born in Japan.
Yep.
Moved to America at the age of 2 or 3. And what he's done, his parents brought him up to do nothing but surf in competitions and win competitions.
Right.
So if this guy... He'd have less chance of paying a bill than Brendan Favola.
Hmm.
He's had everything handed to him on a plate his whole life. Now, sure, he can surf in small ways, you know, up to a certain size. So what happened was that when he came onto it, he was always Kanoa Igarashi from Huntington Beach, you know, California. Spent his lifetime there. So what's happened is that when they announced surfing as an Olympic sport, he's come out and then changed his heritage from American back to Japanese.
Hmm.
Bastards.
And a lot of people, and I think rightly so at the time, called absolute bullshit on it, because the only reason why he went back to calling him, you know, from Japan is because he knew there were only 2 male spots on the US surfing team. And there are no Japanese surfers who could beat him in a heat. So he's had a look and he's gone, well, let's have a look at who the top American surfers are. And you had, at the time when he made the decision, yeah, Kelly Slater was right at the top. John Florence is at the top. There's a guy named Chloe Andino who's actually in the Olympics right now. And there was another one. Might have been Connor Coffin. He was about 50 in line, this guy, Igarashi. So all of a sudden, he's anointed himself as being Japanese. Well, guess where he is right now? He's in Japan, surfing in the Olympics as a hometown hero.
So what kind of world ranking does he have? Like how good is he?
He's in the top 10.
Right. So he's okay.
It shits me because people are calling him this legendary Japanese surfer, and I call absolute bullshit on it, because I would doubt he would know even where Japan is.
Hmm.
Because they don't even surf there in like WSL events anymore. You know, but it's happened in surfing a bit where you've had these people who have heritage from another country.
That's why State of Origin shits me, because in the old days you had to be eligible to play for the Kangaroos to play State of Origin. Now, half of these coconuts are playing for Tonga and fucking Samoa and all this kind of shit.
Yeah. I found it impossible the other night to be blunt and honest to watch State of Origin. And I probably found it hardest listening to Ray Warren trying to adjust to all these players' names.
Yeah.
And listening to him, and there were some players there that decided to change the pronunciation of their names and stuff like that.
Well, Papali's the latest one.
Yeah, he's one. He reminded me of Kate Sebarano.
Papalihi.
I had no idea what that even meant. And I just thought, well, I don't get it. So when I heard him struggling with this, I just thought, are we watching a State of Origin or are we watching a fucking Samoa versus Fiji test? Sort of thought, ah, fuck, I've had enough and just turned it off. I couldn't watch it.
Well,
I'm going to have to knock it on the head, probably from this year, because I think the glory days, as far as the Origin that I remember, are fucking finished.
Yeah, my, as I said to you earlier this year, my rugby league day watching days are, you know, coming to an end, really. Mainly because when I watch it, it's just not exciting to me, right? And then you've got all your other stuff, like, you know, the fucking coconut thing and the poor commentary. It just all adds up. It just all adds up.
I actually firmly believe that rugby league, and this is my opinion, I don't know whether it's yours, but I know some people have this view that I don't think rugby league has ever truly recovered from Super League.
That's right. But on the other side of the coin, I actually enjoyed Super League. Do you know why? Because it was different to what we had.
True. But I think that it was very hard to watch two comps in the 1 year and two separate State of Origins and two separate grand finals and
I'll just go back to that. There's two things on that. Around the time of Super League came, we used to house sit Leanne's grandparents' house when they used to go to Queensland. And they had Foxtel, and we never had Foxtel.
Right.
So that was my first experience of Foxtel, right? And that was in Super League. And I was getting Super League and wrestling and NWA and, or not NWA, fucking, what do you call it? Fucking WWE, WCW. Yeah. So it was all a brand new world to me, right? So I was...
This is in 1997, are we correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was getting new commentators. You know, yes, the game was the same, but yeah, different jerseys and everything. So it was exciting, right? Whereas the traditional rugby league, well, yeah, you watch both, right?
North versus Manly.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, because I remember 97, I remember going to the first ever Hunter Mariners Super League game. I also remember going to the Knights when they won their first grand final. So that was a bit of a year, and you know, before that I went to, you know, several grand finals and, you know, a whatnot, but then when they all came together again, yeah, surely it's you know, and I've had Foxtel for 20 years, so I've had it to watch, but from 2003 I really got into rugby union because we had the World Cup out here.
Yeah.
And I just found that a better game than rugby league. So for me, it's probably around that. It's actually before 2003, because I went to, mate, I was going to All Blacks and Wallabies tests and everything from about 2000. So my interest in the game has probably waned from about 98, 99.
Yeah, but like, there ain't no laughing fucking matter, and you think this is funny.